Gristle salivated. What a lovely bit of meat! Lincoln couldn't see the trolls yet, but their gravelly voices carried downstream, mingling with the babble of their brook. He struggled even harder to break their paralyzing spell, but the more he strained, the more weak, helpless, and desperate he felt. Then he caught a whiff of them, a stink like rotting fish garnished with a plop of poop. Ugh! He would have wrinkled his nose and scrunched his face in disgust, but the paralysis wouldn't let him. "Perhaps we should tuck in right away, my sweet," Nash suggested. "Enjoy a late lunch or early dinner, if you prefer. I can't hardly wait. It looks so scrumptious." They were very close now. Lincoln heard the plash of their webbed feet in the water, then the flap, flap, flap of their steps along the terrace, where he lay trussed like a turkey. Two ugly faces loomed into view on either side of him, green, splotchy faces topped with big, bulbous eyes that showed not the slightest hint of human feeling. "Patience, my plump pudding," Gristle advised. "You know how much better a meal goes down when we've had a chance to sharpen our claws and our appetites. Thinking on it will only add to our pleasure. Remember the saying, dear, once eaten, the meal is gone. Anticipation is a feast prolonged." "Never much like that one," Nash grumbled. "But," he quickly added, "coming from your sweet lips, it sounds like the wisdom of an angel, my heavenly dove." Lincoln couldn't quite tell by the ghastly contortions of Gristle's face and the gargling that emerged from her throat whether she was smiling or snarling at her mate's endearments, but a voice deep down urged him to say something. "I promise I will try to taste better if you just give me time," he blurted, hoping they would be able to hear his thoughts the way Flibbertigibbet did. "I won't think of anything else but tasting good if you allow me time." "It talks," Gristle yelped, and for the teeniest fraction of a second, Lincoln thought he detected a spark of delight, perhaps even affection, in her eyes. "Only to save itself," Nash groused. "You won't hear anything coming out of its mind but weasel words and desperate lies. We should gobble him up before his thoughts become tedious." "Oh, for heaven's sakes, my one and only stick in the mud. Surely a talking supper will be a gorgeous treat," Gristle argued. "We've devoured meals that squeak and squawk and yowl and snap, but never have we tucked into a thing that actually talks. Surely we should savor this dining experience." "Your wish is my command, my most majestical highness," Nash gave in grumpily. "But I do hope we're not talked out of our supper." "Don't be silly," she scoffed, not quite convincingly. "Well then," she said, coming to her senses, "shall we go sharpen our claws and appetites in time for dinner, my dear? Then we can return and see what our supper has to say for itself." Nash couldn't argue with such a reasonable plan, so he and Gristle flapped back into their brook, leaving Lincoln alone to his desperate plight. "Flibbertigibbet," he pleaded, "I do hope you weren't lying about going for help, and please, please hurry."